Great. I'm pleased to join me in welcoming our main speaker, Jim Kay, from Denver, Denver Valley.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jim King. And I'd like to inform you, I wasn't born this old. And when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had hair as brown as Lucas. But that fourth and fifth step is a real bad. I got to you guys on March 8th, 1987. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to die sober. That's all I wanted. I knew you guys could do the one thing I couldn't do, and that's not drink one day at a time, and I could not do that. No matter how strong my will is, and I'll tell you, the strongest, most defiant people I've ever met have been Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't tell me what to do. I may do it. I'm not going to like it. It was sort of like what our single speaker. Thank you very much, dear. You were talking about acceptance, you know, and there's one thing I've learned about acceptance. There's two things. Well, there's acceptance and compliance. Most of us, when we get here through compliance. Now, I don't know about you, when that officer said, turn around and put your hands behind you, I complied, but I didn't like it. And he wasn't going to make me like it either, and the judge wasn't going to make me like it. And no matter what came down the room, I'm not going to like it. But it seemed to run, have a thread running through my life of, I don't like it. And so I always had a tendency to look up. As a small child, I came from a very violent alcoholic family, and I learned, and that's got nothing to do with me, but with my drinking, but I learned how to detach. I learned how to be, to see the world out there. That way I could protect myself, and I could stay actually safe. I didn't have a drink until I was 17 years old. That's when I graduated from high school. And an uncle of mine, who happened to be a heroin addict, I was the very first person in our family to ever graduate out of high school. That may sound strange for people in California, but I'm from Tennessee. From the country. I never knew we were poor until we moved to the city. We had a house that had to be 3 feet up off the ground because the creek was dry, had a pump, had a wood-burning fireplace, did not have electricity. We had kerosene lamps and things like that, a pot-belly stove that my mom and grandmother would cook on, and we had a number 10 wash bucket that they washed clothes in with a scrub brush. We got upgraded one time when we got one of those wringer things that you put on the side of it. Had an outhouse. I'll give you a clue why we have a cutout of a half a moon on an outhouse. So at night when the sun is, when the moon is shining, you can see. Very bad, very advanced. So I learned how to detach because of my dad being very violent. And so I lived my life that way. I never really had a dad. I had a father. And there's an explanation of how I even got to that point. But I had a father, and he really wasn't anything other than he was dealing with his dilemma and his problems the best way that he knew how, and that's what he did. So I lived my life that way. I remember at the age of 5 years old, my dad was beating the hell out of my mom, and I said, if that's what they call love, I'm never going to experience it. Never will I become that vulnerable. Now, I'm a nice guy. I like getting married. I like the things that go along with it. And I'm not just talking about the trip to Vegas. So I did it 5 times. Oh, geez! In essence, I've had my whole life being married to somebody. But the thing with it is, which is nice to know that I fit into the norms of California, marriages in California normally last about 3 years. I'm normal. Because that's about how long I figured it took for them to start finding out who I really was. And if they ever found out who I really was, I can't have that. Somebody's leaving. Either you're leaving or I'm leaving. I really don't care. Because I've learned by the time, I must go ahead and throw in a little extra there, the wife that I'm married to right now, we've been married for 44 years. Alcoholics Anonymous has definitely helped her. If you're new in the program, I saw some new hands of new people in here and the people who celebrated birthdays. I want you to know that if you looked around the room, 99% of this room, when you stood up and you identified, smiled. How often do we see that? So what happened is I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I just wanted to die sober. The young lady that was going to share this podium with me tonight is up in San Luis Obispo doing something. That's my dog. You see, what had happened in that, my last relationship with Jim and my wife is that I actually have started to let myself fall in love with my daughter. I don't care. I mean, I want to care. I want to be a nice guy. I'd like to do that. And as far as you were concerned, I was. But it was all from our feet. I learned how to respond and act according to the norms of society. And the norms of what my perception was, is that this is the way you do it. This place, this planet, is not made for wussies. Not made for nice guys. If you're going to make it in this world, you got to be tough. I did a lot of stuff like get an education. I got to tell you, the only thing I ever learned out of college was how to go to the library. Really. A lot of worthless information. So I'm going to Alcoholics Anonymous because that's all I want is that I want to die. Because you see, I shorted out my electrical system before I got here. And I knew it was over. And I was grateful that it was finally going to be over. Oh, man. And I made my done that final desperation prayer. I got either you take me out or get me out. I don't care which one. Now, why I decided to go to Alcoholics Anonymous is because I am a nice guy. I wanted to leave people who cared about me with something good to say. Dad may have been an old drunk and a pain in the butt, but at least at the end he was sober. And that's all I could think about, maybe perhaps living it. And I could. So they made a mistake one night when I had about 2 weeks sober, and I'm telling you this because I'm defiant, okay? They asked me to share, which was not a good thing. So I stood up and I told you guys, I said, I don't really want to read your big book. It's depressing as hell anyway. And I can see how you need those steps. Me, I'm just here to stay sober one day at a time until I die. I don't want to know your name. I don't want to know my name. You keep your nose out of my business, and I'll keep my nose out of yours. There. I guess I showed you that I set out. I was 3 months sober, and I saw a car I bought my daughter for her graduation, drive down the street, and a resentment hit me. The resentment hit me really hard. I'm a control freak. I feel what I want to feel. And I make sure I get rid of the other part. Alcohol helps me achieve that. Alcohol helps me be defensive. It also helps me change my perception. Well, what can I do if I don't have alcohol? I have to look at the reality of it the way it is. And I saw that car driving down the street, and the resentment hit me that I had allowed myself to care for somebody that I ran off. I didn't beat her or anything. I was never physically violent, but I wasn't emotionally there, I gotta tell you. You know, it's one of those things where I know everything. Sort of like, I don't mind being wrong so long as you're not right. That kind of thing, you know? And I couldn't kick it. I couldn't kick it for 3 days. I'm only 3 months sober, okay? Nothing to do with the steps other than look at them. And there's a truth to it. You do the steps off the wall, all you get is off the wall sobriety. So I was analyzing them, looking at them, seeing how, as I said, you people probably really needed a God, you sick bunch of people. I listened to your stories and it's just not as bad as mine, but pretty bad. I'm not selfish or self-centered or anything. Well, I'll tell you something I learned, and I'm going to fit you into this, is what I'm doing, is that I told God the night before I walked into that last meeting, I said, either you get rid of it, or I'm getting rid of it. I'm not going to live my life like this. So it was bad enough I had to endure life before I got to AA, and I'll be damned if I'm going to endure it after. And I'm sitting in the meeting, and it's getting closer to the time, and we all know, because we've all been there, the newcomer that comes in 5 minutes before the meeting, and we say, does anybody have any burning desires? And this sucker raises his hand. Apparently, well, I come to find out later he had 9 years, but... raised his hand, his name was John. He says, I was having dinner with my wife tonight, and we got into a disagreement, and she picked up her plate of spaghetti and threw it at me. And I picked up my plate of spaghetti, and I threw it at her. She took her glass of water and threw it in my face. I picked up mine, threw it in her face. She picked up her French bread and threw it at me. And I said, I'll be damned if you'll make me drink, and I'm here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much, and he said that. I remember every word that man said. And that was 35 years ago. What I learned from that was, what I had been doing all the time that I had been there those 3 months was I was hearing you, but I never listened to you. I was sort of like living in that Charlie Brown meeting thing, you know. Wah, 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 wah. Oh, yeah, wah, 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 wah. That's all I heard. But I listened to what this guy said because it was exciting and it was cool. And I started practicing how to listen. You know, I listen with that inner voice that I have, not your voice. Or if I do listen to you, I figure out what you're doing wrong. You know, as I said, I looked at the steps. And I analyzed them. And I could literally see how you people needed them. You know? So I started practicing the listening. And I was hearing, now I'm hearing things like get telephone numbers, we get more out of taking someone through the steps than they do. I go, okay. Well, I'm turning around 6 months sober. I'm getting a little intense here. Drink is getting awfully close. Now, I'm only going to tell you what I did. You do however you want to approach it, and what you want to call the people who help you through this thing, whatever you want to call them. I have no problem with it. But I said, okay, so I watched this one guy, and I go, I think I could help that sucker. There are a few things I noticed that he just doesn't know how to do right. Now, you got to remember, I'm pretty well qualified. I've got 6 months. Poor Bob. God love you. We picked the right people, I got to tell you. So I went up to Bob. I said, Bob, would you mind helping me through this thing? He goes, sure. I said, before you give me a final answer, there are some qualifications you have to fulfill first. He goes, what's that? And I go, you say get telephone calls? I mean, get telephone numbers? And if you feel like this, and if you just want to talk, oh. I said, I'm going to do that. And if I don't get you, I'm going to leave a message, and you better call me back. Because I got better things to do than go around calling a bunch of alcoholics. He said, okay, I can do that. And I said, do people say that you get more out of taking somebody through the steps than they do? And he goes, yeah. And I said, I'm taking you through the steps. Kind of arrogant of you, isn't it? Bob recognized the fact that I had met the enemy and the enemy was me. I had to. Because I knew that if I let him take me through that sucker, you want to talk about a beautiful four step. It would have been fast. You would have cried your eyes out. I mean, it was so, it would have been sad. Because I knew I would manipulate it and control it and tell you what you wanted to hear. Just so I could be in charge. So I took Bob through the steps. Now, we have a few things that I've learned in the steps. And I am a person who loves the big book. And I love the steps. I love the traditions. Sometimes I have a problem with the board, but I love AA. I literally love AA. Thank you for being such a kind couple to come out and have dinner with me, even though you paid for it. I'm going to be up here next month, but... thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you for inviting me out here. So what I've learned is that in the steps get complicated. There are degrees up to the steps. If you want to get involved, you will find that there are degrees. We first get here with a contempt. There's a part of the book that says contempt prior to investigation. You don't have to investigate it. You pretty much got it together. You come in here pissed off. Because you could not go ahead and have your alcohol out there like your perception of a normal person is. Well, you ain't normal. So you're going to be angry. You're going to be, you're going to have a little contempt. I think you might have gathered I had some when I told you about what I thought. So you're going to have a little bit of anger, contempt going on. And what you fail to understand is that you've got a little bit of willingness. You may not like it. You may not know it. You got a little bit of willingness. Now, when I first heard how this program works, honestly, open-mindedness, willingness, I said, far out, I know the answer. But that's actually not true. You get open-minded in step two. And you get a little more willing in step three. My step three with Bob was, after I made sure he got through step one and two, he translated all my thinking. That's what he did. He translated the big book into what I... Have you thought about looking at it this way? Oh, no. I know about it. I said, I wasn't going to do step three. And I studied theology and all that good stuff, and I had no problem with it. But I said, I'm not going to do step three. He said, well, we can't do step... four and then you do step three. And I said, yeah, I know, but I have a solution. He says, what's that? And I said, I'll make a decision to make a decision, but I'm not making a decision. Now, Bob, in his great wisdom, because this man was wise beyond my years, he says, that's good enough. Let's move on. And we did. We moved on. One of the things that I've noticed as I continue to go along this gig is that we had a change in perception, and I think Clancy talked about it one time, when we take that drink, our perception starts to change. And when I've noticed that when I change the way I see things, the things I see seem to change. I don't know if you've noticed, but if you get, when we leave tonight, you will probably recognize how many people out there. You know them. You know, those cat guys with the crap and all that stuff. You will probably notice how many of them have straightened up their life since you quit drinking. Isn't that something? If you'd have done that before, I probably wouldn't have had to drink. Yeah, right. If you want to believe that one. So I had to learn to go ahead and start looking at things differently. I don't know about you, but that was difficult. I looked at step 11 where at the bottom it says in the power to carry this out. I said, when I first looked at that step, I said, I would love to have the courage to see the beauty in the world, to see the beauty in you. But I just can't. I just can't. I have to be broken enough. I have to go ahead and go through the rest of the steps, getting into the fourth step, getting that weight off, lightening up the load, telling it to another man, in my case, another man, who is really only there to tell, to show me that we can live in this world, and then moving on down the road. You know, one of the things that I mentioned about perception is the fact that, I don't know about you, but I like Friday night happy Halloweens. Don't you love those? Because that draws me back into Friday night happy hour. I used to be able to try to maintain my drinking through the day so I could make it to happy hour. Because there's a lot of normal people in there. A lot of easy marks. There are a lot of people in there wanting to have just a nice cocktail before they go home because, you know, they're enjoying it. And it works for them. It works for them. That first beer I had for my graduation my uncle gave me, I'd never drank before. I drank that first beer because he wanted another. I said, sure. And man, I could not believe the wonder in alcohol. What is your problem? I identified automatically with that because I knew that I had gained some courage I didn't have before. So I asked my uncle if he would buy me some booze because I was going to the senior prom. I've never drank before, but I figured if he could get me 2 quarts of vodka, I could probably get laid. I think you see how the connection between alcohol and my marriage is going here. Seems to set up a pattern, doesn't it? So, as I said, I'm going through all this process and I'm learning to try to look at things differently. We used to say that, you know, we're going to love you until you can learn to love us back. I'm going to tell you, I said, what a crock that is. You know, I just ain't going to do it. I mean, first of all, I'm not going to do it, and I ain't going to let you do it to me either. Like I got that power, right? So what I learned is that going through this process of doing these things, and doing these things, and doing these things, that things start changing. You know, when I talked about a little bit earlier about taking that first drink and having that perception, I was talking about going to happy hour on Friday night, and you've been able to maintain all day, and you go to that bar, and you know what they're playing on the jukebox? Born to be wild. Right? Yes! This is gonna be the night I'm gonna keep it all together. This is wonderful. Born to be, that's me. I'm the bad boy. And you know, I don't know about this works for women too, just like it does for men. There's that zero sitting down at the end of the bar. Oh, I'm going to stay up here. That's an out last time. Oh, gee. Then around 11 o'clock, all the normal people have gone home. And the jukebox playing Born to Lose. And you're sitting there and you look down there and that zero is up to around a six. And at 12 o'clock, you're all ten. You find yourself walking down there, I can only use this example as for a man, you walk down there and you go, hi, how are you? And she turns to the room, and you go, sounds like somebody I could have a conversation with. And you're sitting down there talking to her, and you're going, geez, I'm amazed we haven't met before. We have so much in common. And you know, that one tooth you got is really good looking. Then you take it home. Then in the morning, you wake up. And you go, oh, you look at it. Oh, God, where did I get it? What did I do with it? How am I going to get rid of it? The problem with that is that cycle seems to have a tendency to repeat itself. Actually, I think at times, sometimes looking back at it, I think we start touching out lower grade bars so we can find more of it. Because somewhere along the line, you take it home, and then the next morning you open your eyes, and now it's looking at you. And it, you realize you have just now become it. Because it's looking at you going, oh God, what did I do with it? Where did I get it and how am I going to get rid of it? Now, if we're lucky, that should be the first stage of incomprehensible demoralization. If we're lucky. And so, you know, that change in perception. How can I create that without alcohol? I've lived my life drinking, wanting to create anything. You know, you have a cocktail at this time, you drink beer during the day. You know, you might have a little shot in the morning, but that's the hair of the dog that bit you. No big deal. No problem. But you know, you start drinking cognac and brandy, and you find yourself in the supermarket one day going down the liquor aisle, looking at all those beautiful labels and acting like you're really concerned. I'm a conscientious consumer. When in reality we're looking alcohol per volume. And how much does it cost? Because all of a sudden, you know, I may think that I'm drinking high level, but pop off isn't really high level. You know, or come catch me. And so we start devising ways to be able to drink successfully without going to jail. Most creative people I've ever met have been alcoholics. We are all extremely creative. Listen to how many ways there are to sneak a drink. You know, how many different ways? There was a pilot in our program, who led the first squadron of Sabre jets in Korea. and he went out on a mission, and he got into a dog fight, and he got shot up, and he felt something really warm on his leg. His first response was, "God, I hope that's not my bottle." Now, I'll go ahead and give you my... I've talked to a few guys who were skiers, working in ski patrol, up there saving lives, and they kept their ski poles still full of booze. I'm going to give you some new insights here. Most of us have windshield washers and windshield wipers. You can disconnect that windshield washer, and you can fill that dispenser with booze. And you can run a line into the inside of your compartment. And if you're smart, you'll get your fancy turn off and on. So anytime you want a drink, you just hit the wash the windshield. Right? Maybe hot, but that's okay. We don't mind, because after we kill those taste buds off, who cares? Right? Who cares? I mean, we're not drinking for effect. I might think that I'm drinking for the taste of it. You know? But it just doesn't work that way. We keep on going down through these steps, and I'll tell you one of the things I was in a meeting. I don't know how much time I have, hon. Okay, I was sitting in a meeting one day, and we were discussing the 11th step, spirituality. And I know that if you're like me, it's difficult to understand the concept and application of that. Now, I was sitting in the meeting, and the meeting got through, and it was a nice room like this, all air-conditioned and everything, the windows and doors and all that stuff. And I was looking out the door, out the window, because I kind of had a habit of that, like in school. So I was watching the wind, three outsiders giving a heck, doing one of these things, right? All of a sudden I saw a bag blow down the street. And I said, geez, you know, look at all that air and wind out there blowing everything around, and I'm sitting in here, and there's nothing. And I said, you know, maybe perhaps spirituality is a little bit more like air. Maybe it's like that. Now, I know we're in California and we're concerned about everything, but you can't really see air. You can't really touch it. Most of us can anyway. You know, and so it's just there. What do we do is we go ahead and we breathe. Now, I don't know about some of you. Have you ever said you got really pissed off and said, "I'm just going to hold my breath till I die"? Seems to be a problem there, isn't there? Because it seems like somewhere in there, well, I'll just take one more breath, then I'll die. So I breathe automatically. I just breathe. That's pretty much it. And by breathing, I seem to stay alive. And I said, maybe spirituality is a little bit like that. It's everywhere. Spirituality is the study in this room, and when we walk outside, it'll be outside too. It's everywhere. But the thing about it is that you can only see the result of it. You can only see the result of it. You know, so I could stay here and I could go through biblically and tell you all the places and stuff like that, but it won't make any sense until I make it simple for me. You know, I learned to handle somebody. That's what we do here in AA, and that's what I've learned to do. I used to go on 12-step calls. When I got here, we had the ABCs, ashtrays, brooms, and cups. And we actually used on the seventh tradition basket, we used to put cigarettes in there. So if somebody needed a cigarette, you could take one. But that's what we do. We help each other. I don't have to do anything other than when I change my thoughts about you, I become vulnerable to helping you, whether you like it or not. And me sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is being of service. I still go to a lot of meetings because I like going to a lot of meetings. Not necessarily because I need to get something. It's an opportunity for me to be there in the body, breathing, and just there. Just there. Being there for somebody else. And I told guys who were saying they're having a hard time, I said, look, go find somebody in this room that has a little bit of time, who has gone through the steps, and go over there and ask if you can help them. No power struggles here. And maybe perhaps the two of you will be able to stay sober. I'll give you a small example of my change in perception, and this is me, and I've had to fight this kid all the way down the line. When Bob, the fellow that helped me do this program, came down with cancer, and he could hardly even walk. He was a fellow my size, about my weight, and he got down to around 90 pounds, and he could hardly even move. I'd go over and I'd pick him up, put him in my bed, and take him to his doctor's appointment. Pick him up, put him in my bed. I always had a couple of bottles of water because I used to joke around, God, man, did we miss out. Everybody's walking, driving around with a bottle of water now. We used to have to hide our vodka. Had to get those cups and cans that said Pepsi on it or some shit. At my job, I used to drink on the work, on my job, right? It took me 2 years before I could ever drink a regular Sprite. Ugh. Because at work, I had to act like I was drinking Sprite, but I couldn't just fill it with vodka, so I'd have to have a mixed drink. Cocktail. So I was doing that with Bob, taking him to these things, and all of a sudden Bob got extremely ill, and I mean getting worse, and so we knew that there wasn't anything anybody could do, and so this shows you how nice people are. His girlfriend said, you know, Bob doesn't really have a health care plan, and he's going through the VA, and she says, I have an excellent one. I think what I'm going to do is this, I'm going to tell Bob let's get married so he can get on my health care plan. Isn't that nice? I mean, wow. I know it was his girlfriend, but gee, yeah, that's nice. So she did, and he was told that it's nothing that they could do. So he was in a care unit, and I'd go over there every night, and I'd sit with him. And I'd sit there, and I'd hold his hand. And as you can probably tell a little bit, all I did is sit there and tell him jokes. And all of a sudden, I noticed he wasn't breathing. And I knew he'd gone. I called the nurse, and the nurse came in. I said, he's not blinking anymore. I think Bob's gone. And so she said, yes, he's gone. His nephew was there, drunk. And that's okay. I don't have any problem with alcohol. I've seen spotting anybody and anything, including alcohol, a long time ago. But his nephew says, oh, look, because you know drunks have a tendency to be emotional. Kind of strange, huh?
Oh, poor Bob. Poor Bob, oh my God. It's probably good that he's gone because look how bad he looks.
And I go, I didn't say he looked that bad.
Well,
use a few adjectives in there. Blah, 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 blah. You didn't see them? I said, yeah, I saw a skeleton there of a guy who just passed away. I said, but that's not who I saw.
Well, what did you see?
I said, I saw the man that gave me a hand up. I saw a good man who was willing to take his time, to help give me sobriety. And I literally had one of those Dorian Gray moments, to where I saw what Bob looked like, but I didn't see Bob. I didn't see the skeleton. I saw Bob. I have a bad habit of looking for the good in people who have passed away to carry on the legacy of them. My mom was passing away, and I drove down to Temecula every night to sit there with her and tell her a joke and talk to her. Now, this is interesting to me because, you know, I knew I had a mom. And I knew I had a grandmother. Hi, how you doing? I'm going to try to get an extra minute out of this. And as I'm sitting down there with her every night, and she's going through the process of passing away because her organs are giving away and stuff like that. So as we're sitting down, she did two things. Just blew me away, both of them. One said, she turned to me one night and she said, you know, I can't believe how fortunate my life has been to have such a wonderful son in it. I went, wow. And the second one was, she was in so much pain one night, and we kept her loaded. If there's drug addicts in here, which I'm sure there might be a few that have tested the waters, we kept her comatose. She was so loaded. She came up out of that bed, and she called for her mom. And I sat there and I went, whoa, wait a minute here. I didn't know my mom had a mom. Because I never paid any attention. I never paid any attention to her. I never looked at her being a teenager. She got married at 16. We're from Tennessee. She was an old lady by then. But she was a teenager with all the thoughts and feelings and emotions and rampantness that goes on with teenagers. I never thought of my mother as being a, that kind of person. And I realized I had a grandmother who was my mom's mom. And what it did for me, it changed my perception of women. Now, I never looked at women and said, Fogdick, or any of that other stuff. But it allowed me to look at you as another person who's just like me, trying to get along in this world, trying to do things that you can to survive, thinking that existence is good enough. Well, existence isn't good enough. And there is rewards out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You will gain them, and you will be blown away. You'll be one of those people who says, you know, I had a problem, and I was looking, I decided to look at the big book, and I found it on page 23. Who put that in there? Right? My first speaker I ever heard was poor John. He's a sweet man. He had 40 years sobriety. He died, so... well, 35 years ago. But he ended his talk this way, I in mine, the same way. He says, you know, what's nice about being an Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, I, and I'll use me, have learned to go ahead and love each and every one of you in this room unconditionally. And there's nothing you can do about it. And I sat there and I said, oh yeah, well I ain't taking it. Like I have some kind of power. I want to thank you very much for inviting me out. I hope that my talk kind of give you something. Thank you very much for being wonderful hosts. They bought me dinner tonight with you. I kind of hoped for a little bit of the higher class first. You do what you do, right? And thank you very much.
A round of applause for Jim.